the MMA Roadshow, episode number 431. My name is John Morgan, and Cold Coffee is with me here in a steaming hot summertime Las Vegas. International Fight Week is coming, and I'm telling you, if y'all are making the trip to Las Vegas, y'all best get ready. We warned you about the traffic. Now we're giving you a heads up on the weather because summer is finally here.
It's finally here. This week, we're finally, what'd you say the time? It's been 200 and...
It's a record in terms of recorded history in Las Vegas. 291 consecutive days without reaching 100 degrees. And I believe that ends tomorrow, if not today.
If we didn't get it today, which I think we did, it's going to be tomorrow. But yeah, we're now getting ready to go through a stretch culminating in this Saturday, and I think it's Sunday. It's either Friday and Saturday. Both days are supposed to be 110, or it's Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, Saturday 110. I'm looking at one here that says Sunday and Monday, 113.
That's fucking crazy. That's even higher than what the news was yesterday. That's how that shit just changed.
It's that time. You know, as much as, you know, a 15-year resident of Las Vegas, as much as I like to champion about living here in Las Vegas. I mean, speaking of champions, the city of champions, of the reigning National Hockey League champions, the Las Vegas Golden Knights here. I almost said Las Vegas Golden Knights. I would be skewered for that. But no, during the summertime, I will say it does get to, you know, that July and August stretch where literally if you turn on your news at night and see your weather report, it's just like 115 over 90, 115 over 90, yep. 115 over 90 for a whole consecutive week.
Well, that being said, right now it's supposed to be 98 degrees. I think we did hit the 100 threshold here, but what did we say as soon as we walked out of the Apex? Because there was a breeze. It felt pretty good. I mean, that's the difference. I mean, if it's not high noon where the sun's completely beating down, if you could find a piece of shade, it feels a lot better. But if you have a breeze, it doesn't feel bad.
Right.
I mean, unlike places where any other place in the States where you have humidity, you could have the greatest breeze ever and you don't get away from it.
Still hot.
The sweat's just dripping everywhere. But it felt pretty good. Like, it didn't actually feel, which makes me feel good going into what's getting ready to be triple-digit season.
Feels
good to think that, okay, we haven't lost it completely. You know, you still got that summer skin on you. But I say that before we've had a crazy stretch of 100 days or something.
Ready
before
for
get
next
beat down.
Week. I will say I wish it could have waited maybe like one more week. Because if we would have had a nice kind of mild international fight week, because the schedule next week is going to be crazy. There's so much stuff going on in Las Vegas. And I love it, man. It's a lot of fun. But it's just all that running around and it's, you know, burning hot.
Don't want to be standing outside.
Like, No. You don't want to be waiting in line. That's the thing. It's like you're waiting in line to get into the arena or into the convention center or into the wherever it may be. That's a little bit rough.
That's when we definitely say, I mean, it's one thing to get there early, but it's not general admission. I mean, we get there early, but usually there's places we could tuck into the shade. But for the actual general entry, depending on what time of the day, the shadow doesn't stretch that far past the entrance.
Yep.
So don't get there too early because then you're just going to be killing yourself because you're going to be standing out in the sun. And then you're just going to be an absolute wreck because, you know, sun poisoning is a real thing. And, like, if you're sitting out there and you get dehydrated, last thing you want to do is be dehydrated and then go sit in an arena drinking more beers, dehydrating yourself more.
Especially when you're having some frozen beverages
it's dehydrated.
Bad. It's bad. That's when you start seeing people
fall.
It's a bad
story. Yeah, which is always terrible. So, you know, as much as we joke about how we're happy to get back in the sun, I mean, you definitely still have to watch it. And yeah, so some of the events, if you do come out here and it is early or if it's a day where there's going to be sun, don't show up too early. Find one of the bars, which there are plenty of in the area, and just go there last minute because your seat's already good to go. Because it's brutal. It's easy to think that, oh, I got this. Mm-hmm. And then it catches up to you. Same thing when I did the boxing thing recently. It wasn't that crazy heat, but it was just sitting in the sun. And the next thing you know, I started seeing people just dropping. And then it gets scary because, once your body gets to that point where it's that affected, you gotta seek immediate help. Yep. I mean, you gotta really hydrate and you gotta watch because at that point, it's easy for some people, especially if you're drunk, you're like, oh, let me just get to some shade. Here, get me another beer. I'll feel better. Shit can go really, really bad. So you gotta be smart about it. And so you gotta have good wingmen or wingwomen with you, or you have to listen to a great podcast like this where we give you tips.
We give you the tips
give you
for
tips.
Surviving.
Stay hydrated. So don't get there too early. Don't stand in the sun. Don't drink too much beer. Have some water with your beer. And then
we getting old. We being responsible about stuff.
Well, as I was just telling you earlier about how I drove a little too drunk on my birthday, but baby steps
of growth and responsibility. I tell you what, past weekend just got back from Canada. Speaking of getting away from the hot temperature, still kind of nice out there on the Atlantic coast, man. Did a show out in New Brunswick, thanks to the folks at Fight League Atlantic. Great promotion out there. Really appreciated working with them. We had 9 fights on the night, and we had 8 finishes, man.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it made it fun. It was my 4th show working with the organization, 4th show calling fights with my man Chris Kalaitis, the former M1 champ, the UFC veteran as well. So we've done 4 shows together, so now that's kind of – you start getting a little rhythm a little bit, kind of know when each other's coming in, when they're, you know, what they're kind of leading up to. So it was fun. But
we'll get there someday.
One of these days we'll get it figured out. But, you know, it was kind of funny because, you know, a lot of people after the show were like, hey, man, I thought you guys sounded really good tonight. You know, people that are watching, whatever. I'm like, dude, if you can't call a fight with 8 finishes out of 9 fights and make it entertaining, you probably should not be calling fights anymore. So
yeah, because then the fights are doing the work for
you. Exactly. It was just as easy as it can get, man. The fights are doing all the work for you. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see out there. Like I said, it's a bunch of youngsters and kids and guys that couldn't fight during the pandemic, and you know, so their careers kind of got stunted a little bit, you know. But because of that, they've been kind of just pent up and ready to throw down, man. So that they're really doing.
Is the pandemic good job. Over? Because Kevin Lee, I think he's not quite sure if the UFC knows that it's over, right?
Kevin Lee was not happy about fighting in the UFC Apex. Of course, we just got done with Media Day for UFC on ESPN 47. The main event will be Sean Strickland and Abus Magomedov. Or,
is that how you say it? Abus?
I guess it's Abu if you're Abu. If you're Sean Strickland.
He kept saying that. I didn't understand who he was talking about because I was like, who's this Abu dude? And I was like, he can't be talking about his opponent, right?
Yeah, I always, to be honest, when he was fighting, when Magomedov was fighting in the other organizations, I always thought it was Abus, to be honest with you. But I've heard the pronunciation as
Abus.
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 So I want to get that right. But yeah, Kevin Lee was not exactly thrilled. And I thought it was kind of funny, right? Because I think Kevin Lee was one of the people we were most excited to speak to today. I think most people were most fired up to hear from and just kind of find out where his head was at. And really, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I think that it was it really did, to me at least, feel like a more mature Kevin Lee, like a guy that kind of wants to be a little bit more reserved, you know, that's not really trying to be a big talker and you know, more considered in the things he's saying and not trying to be boisterous and loud and all those things. I shouldn't even say loud, just boisterous, you know what I mean? Not trying to be braggadocious or whatever, you know?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But then somebody asked him if he was kind of disappointed to be fighting in the Apex, and he basically did not hold back. He was – not only did he say, like, you know, he was like, well, yeah, I am, you know, but not only did he say, yeah, I am – and say, you know, well, I would prefer to be fighting in a full arena.
Crowds,
you know what I mean? You know? I missed that. I needed the energy. He was just like, this is stupid. What are we doing fighting in the Apex? What are we doing? Does somebody not know the pandemic is over?
Yeah. Whereas we're always like, dude, I love the fast internet. It's easy to drive from the house. I mean, but honestly, like, we're going to be at the event regardless. So, like, I'm not looking at the fight card. I know we always talk about people talk about the fight card quality. You can't be mad having Kevin Lee making his return on an Apex card for somebody that likes to shit on an Apex card, and especially the guy that he's fighting against. But yeah, it was kind of surreal and it was kind of interesting to hear. But it's funny because I feel like we've lately had so much discussion always just about the fact of, like, oh, you know, just the level of fights that are getting put together. But it was just kind of funny to have somebody out of the blue kind of bring up the whole pandemic thing, because for so long it was like the word that was always being thrown, but I feel like nobody said it for a while
because
we are beyond it, you know?
Yeah.
And then for him to bring it up, it was just kind of like, oh, that's definitely one way to throw it back at the guy that's running a company that's been like, dude, I've been over this pandemic shit forever. And it's like, you know, hey, you know, but he makes a good point. I mean, it is money. I mean, they save money on the production. I mean, the production's in-house. They have multiple broadcasts that are able to come out of that one venue. And it is a money sort of play. I mean,
it's a huge money play. It saves on operations.
So much money.
It saves on travel for the whole staff. Can you imagine, you know, trying to sell tickets for this? Because while
– what did he say at the end? He's like, instead of fighting in front of, like, 200 rich people.
Yeah. He's like these 200 rich people. It is true. I mean, I will say that is one thing that I wish they could have. Because you and I – are definitely in the minority in that we don't mind the Apex shows that much. And again, I think part of it really falls to just our own convenience, to be honest with you.
100%.
But I completely understand why they want to do it as an organization, because, if you said, the financial savings, plus the fact that, like, look, you don't have to worry about selling tickets to this card, which it would be a challenge to sell tickets to this card. I mean, you know, I don't think you want to parade Sean Strickland around to the local radio DJs and try to, you know, hawk tickets or whatever.
Most definitely do not put him in front of a mic.
Don't do that. So that would be a challenge. But I do wish they would change the environment a little bit. I mean, there's no question that the Apex is going to be a permanent fixture. So anybody that's saying, man, they got to get away from the Apex. Like, they did not invest a lot of money in that place to not do events there. They're going to do events there. But I do hope they get to it. And you'll remember, man, we were around during the construction. We were around during the opening. They said that, man, we think we can fit this thing out with like 750 or 1,000 people. And, you know, on fight nights, there's just, maybe 200 people tops.
Yep.
But there's so much floor space that's not being used. I mean, they could absolutely build it out. And, to Kevin Lee's point about the rich people, those tickets are like $1,500 a piece, man. Yeah. And granted, it's all you can eat and all you can drink. But you got all you can eat and all you can drink a lot to get $1,500. And it is, look, if you can afford it, I know some people that have paid to go there, and I know some people that will that say it's the coolest experience I've ever had. You know, I've been to a UFC event before, but, you know, never am I 3 feet away from the fighters. Like, I can shake their hand. I can take pictures with every single person that walks out of the octagon. I can hear the coaches. Like, there is something cool about the experience. I just wish there was a way to make it open to more people. And look, just like we got done talking about last week, I mean, and let's open it up for the families. And you know what I mean? And my understanding is they are still trying to expand the seating in there. It just seems like it's taken an awful long time.
Yeah. And, you know, we've seen people – I remember when they've done VIP packages at, like, the big arenas and stuff when I still used to work for the UFC. Like, I remember when the fighters would do some of the rivals at the venue, they would kind of go and do this walkthrough through the floor. They'd walk into the arena, they'd walk into the octagon, they'd kind of be able to get their feet sort of, you know, matted into the ground, you know, you kind of see them warming in, and then you would see the VIP people come in there and they would walk through that. But that's all they got to walk through. They'd come in, they'd have their little area, whatever, where they had their stuff set up, and then they walk through the octagon, that's it. But at the Apex, those guys have to be getting like a killer behind the scenes tour that is even more immersive than what they are getting at like the venue. So I get it where, you know, if it's a pay-per-view and there's crazy card, I can see where somebody's paying mad money for VIP to go through it. But I think if somebody's spending sort of the equivalent or maybe even less money on a VIP package, they're getting more value for their VIP dollars going through an Apex show.
True.
Just in terms of if you like the behind-the-scenes view of how the UFCs ran, because I think you're going to see more here. You're going to see the back rooms. You're going to get to see the gym that they train in during the thing, which now they can say, hey, this is where the tough show was filmed.
That's
They get to see like the VIP lounges. There's different little areas where I think for somebody that's going to spend that money, they got to be like, cool. And for somebody that's that diehard, yes, the card is part of the factor, but I think the other factor is just being part of the UFC environment in that show. You could insert fighter,
you're damn near part
whatever
of the show at that point.
Exactly. I mean, so it's neat and it's cool. So I think it's kind of neat for that sort of thing, but easily, I know we talked last week, you know, the risers could be bigger.
Yep.
You know, why not use that giant space in the back that, why not fit that out to be? I mean, granted, they'd have to do a whole sort of remodel that they've done. Where the octagon is set up now in the Apex, that's just one small sectional room. On the back side of that wall goes into a much larger storage area where we used to have other stuff. If they could have ever built that out back when the tent used to fail when there was bad weather. When this goes back to the Apex, when we used to always talk about how they'd have the big tent behind the Apex where we would have our
this
post-fight
was during the height of the pandemic where we had to stay out of the building.
And when we first started going to the Apex, you know, that's where we lived. When that got really shitty, they would bring us indoors to this back area, and we only took up a fraction of this space.
It's like an airplane hangar
in there. Ginormous.
It's huge.
So I don't know why they didn't at one point just say, just build it out. Just take the time to build it out and then decide, okay, what show do we want to have, and have there be the option A and then have option B. I know that they did talk about, you know, they wanted to build the facility out to maintain multiple shows. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if part of the factor is like, okay, well, maybe the storage that's equate, you know, say then they had the skate show or say they have whatever show. Maybe they need that back space for storage or be able to bring set pieces in that they didn't want to build a full build out in that back area. Has to be some particular reason because I wondered why they didn't. But it still makes sense to me that they could have built out a complete different sort of setup depending on how big they wanted the crowd to be for an Apex show. But in terms of like just making immediate moves to build out and have more space, they have the room there. They definitely have the space there. They've just decided either it's just not worth the effort right now, because ultimately I think just like Dana wants to get out of there and go to these other places, I think when they're now facing that idea of, okay, do we need to make the steps and make the changes to increase capacity at the Apex now? Or do we just find another damn location? So on some of those shows, now we're starting to see the Fight Nights go and pop up in other different locations.
At the Virgin Las Vegas.
At the Virgin Las Vegas. And then, or just go on the road somewhere. Right. I mean, if Dana had his druthers, I mean, they'd be on the road every week, but that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. I think the big thing to take out of this is that I get it, man. A lot of people want to gripe about the Apex shows, but what you need to realize is the Apex shows are not going away. There's a reason that the building was purchased. There is a significant amount of infrastructure that has been built into there, right? I mean, the control room that they have there, everything. There's a lot
of money.
The
control room is just fantastic.
It's incredible. Yep. So everything has been – a lot of money has been invested. It's not going away. But what you – if you really – if it bothers you so much and you really want to see something different and you want to see something better, I think what you have to do is figure out, you know, what would make it better. And I just think more people in there. And then, I mean, and this is silly, but then nobody would ever know this, like, if they hadn't been in there. But, and this might be part of the reason they haven't been able to expand it. Like, you will need, like, more bathrooms, for instance. Like, if you have more people, and there's like, one bathroom that's available to the public. There are other bathrooms, but those are, like, the locker rooms and for the staff and all that
for
stuff.
For the public,
so
one bathroom.
There's literally one bathroom that has
three stalls. Two of them being like they have shitters and then one stand-up pisser.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
So imagine if you're trying to fill it like a 1,000-seat arena and there's three stalls.
And everyone's using that.
Everyone.
I went from the media room going in there and I have the cut man running in there.
Yeah.
Or you have the ref that's coming that just got up there. I'll see Herb Dean. I'll see whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how crazy that it is of sharing space. And that, you know, and if you multiply that by two, even times two, it's that harder for them to get in there. It's just ridiculous. Luckily, I know of like the headquarters or the one that there's a restroom upstairs the office people use that if it's bad downstairs.
Oh, do you sneak up there?
I'll go upstairs.
Oh, look at you.
But if we didn't know these people,
VIP.
I would never go.
Look
I would
at that,
never do
VIP.
It. Because when I go up there, I run into people that are actually in like the broadcast booth
right.
and some of the other stuff like that. And like, so they're like, oh, hey, whatever. But like, if random like fan went up there, I'm sure they'd be like, You're not supposed to be up here, you know. And now that, too, so when we were leaving media day today, they were busting down some of the tables, and they were getting ready to set it up for the NFL, what is it, draft stuff or NFL?
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl stuff.
Because the Super Bowl is going to be here in February, and so they're having, like, weekly committee meetings and stuff.
So some of the empty space that's upstairs near where this bathroom is NFL space.
Yep.
So now it's even probably more obscene if like a regular fan would go upstairs, because then they're like, you're not just running into UFC staff that you shouldn't be seeing. You might be running into NFL personnel that they definitely don't want
That's
to see.
That's what they really care about. They're the ones that are going to tell you. All right, let's get the official pronunciation here, by the way. I pulled this up, so I want to make sure I don't get it wrong for the rest of the time. Gotta turn the volume. Where are we at? Oh, producing on the air. What are we doing? Oh,
What are you getting, a spinning wheel?
Oh, I'm getting the, what do you call it, the Siri or the assistant?
My name is Abus Magomedov.
Abus.
My name is Abus Magomedov.
Abus.
Abus, there you go. So I used to call him Abus.
So Abus, pretty close. All right, Strickland, we take that back, dog. You just got to add those on the end of it.
Sean Strickland was busted. All right, so Kevin Lee, we'll see if that ruffles any feathers. You know what's funny is like
I don't think it will.
I hope not, because like there always seemed to be this underlying tension between him and management, and you know, here he is, he's back, and I'm like, please don't put him in the doghouse already.
I think you're 100% right though, with like the maturity level. There was definitely something different. I don't know if it's the time away, it's the potential of maybe not thinking or thinking that you're not going to get back into like the highest level of MMA.
Mm-hmm.
There was something different today, 100%. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but I think you're right. I think it's maturity. I think it's maybe if there was a little bit of gratitude in there. I think seeing his brother doing so well and just putting in perspective, like, he's doing his life path, I'm doing my life path, you know, and this is what I'm all in for, you know, this itch to fight or whatever. But there was something different. And I appreciate it. But we'd seen that before.
Sure.
It wasn't like it was always just like, hey, I'm the shit every time, you know, that we'd see him. But yes, there was a lot less ego present that it felt in the conversation, or a lot less like,
no,
watch me, watch what I'm going to do, watch what I'm going to do. It was, just, it was a guy that definitely seemed like he was grateful to be there and perform back in front of the UFC fans.
Well, when I think about Kevin Lee, like, you know, we were talking last week about like Macy Barber, right? There's so many people that don't like Macy Barber, but you know, here she was, 20 years old. She
fucking showed up.
Just
a,
you know what I mean? Oh, she looked amazing last week, man.
What a, I look like a fucking champ making that pick on that one.
100%, man. She so looked good. Phenomenal. But you know, a lot of people didn't like her because she came in, she had the swagger, she talked, and she had it. But again, she's a kid. She's legit a kid.
A legit kid.
And Kevin Lee was not that much older when he first started getting thrust in the spotlight. And he really got tagged by the UFC as like, hey, here's one of our next guys. Like, so we're going to push this guy. And I think Kevin, you know, kind of fed into that a little bit as well. It's like, hold on, they're giving me the push. Now I got to be the performer as well. I mean, this is the height of the Conor McGregor era, right? Like,
9 years ago.
It's crazy, right? Like, he's coming out there trying to think.
He fucking came in against Al Iaquinta.
It's crazy.
That's who he's. That's who his first UFC fight was against.
That's crazy.
Dude, that's gnarly. That's absolutely gnarly.
Well, he is a he is an underdog here against Renat Fakhretdinov.
Oh, should I go get the hat?
Which hat? What do you?
Do you not remember Renat in his post fight, like two post fights ago? I was like, I asked him about his hat, you know, and how it was special. And he's like, I'm gonna bring all you guys the hat back. So when he came back the next time, I kind of forgot all about it.
Yeah,
and then he started bringing it. He's like, last time, you know, one of you was asking about the hat, you know, or whatever. So I wanted to give, and I was like, wait, I think that was me. And he's like, yeah. You here, and I was like,
it's sitting in the office
in there. So.
That's hilarious. So, yeah. I mean, so I guess you're bound to go. Well, you didn't have to make a pick because they're on the prelims, right?
I didn't, but I think I did. We still had to make a pick, and I think I did pick him.
Yeah, he's.
I think I just had questions about Kevin going into 170, and I just and plus two. I guess I kind of homered, but Renat's the real him. That's the real deal, dude. He's bad. Renat,
you gave him the Portuguese. Hold on, let's hear.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at this.
Hi, my name is Renat
Gladiator. Renat? I totally did the Brazilian. Do it again, dude.
My name, Renat Gladiator Fakhretdinov.
Fakhretdinov.
Okay, now hold on. Here's one thing that gets me about
this. So he definitely did the Renat. I definitely did the Brazilian. Didn't
you did,
realize
you gave
I did
the Renat. There's one thing about these pronunciations, though, that give me. So he says his nickname is Gladiator.
Did he say Gladiator?
Yeah, so does that mean, I mean, if we're going to nail it by the way they say it, then does that mean that they have to say Gladiator?
So Bruce Buffer, Renat Gladiator! Fucking it off.
Oh, my goodness. All right, listen.
That's going to be a good one, though.
That is a good one.
I think a lot of people are going to be really looking at Kevin just to see how he is, and I think his mindset, you know, I think it's one thing to see him calm and cool right now, but then you know, it might not be a bad idea to start without a crazy crowd. Maybe if he had a crazy crowd, would get his emotions too riled up or something. I mean, different team. I think the last time we saw him in the UFC, he was still working with the Extreme Couture and, like, dude that fucking Strickland reamed.
Dewey Cooper.
Dewey.
Yeah. Well, Strickland just went off on Dewey Cooper.
He was like, it's going to be awkward when we see him. We might find him like, yeah, bro, you just kind of really shed on him.
It is going to be awkward. It is going to be very awkward.
You know, he's at your gym. Like, where's the gym loyalty, bro? Like, I don't get it. Like, if you know you're going to see somebody, whether you think they're great, whether you think they're whatever, isn't there anything inside you? There's nothing voice in the back of your head that says, should I just not say that thing? If I'm going to have to see this person?
Well, it was so funny because right before he's like, y'all are going to make me go there, aren't you? Y'all are going to make me go there. And nobody's saying anything. Like, literally, everybody's just like.
Maybe he wasn't talking to us. He was talking to the voices.
That makes total sense.
So they were actually answering. They're like, we're going to do it, Sean. You better do it. You better say it, Sean. He's like, you're going to make me do it. Yeah, we are, Sean. Yeah, we are.
That's the perfect explanation. He's like, y'all going to make me go there. And he hears it in his head like, yes, Sean.
Yes, Sean.
You must go there.
I dare you. I dare you to say it, Sean.
Oh, my God.
But yeah.
Like and the then voices he went, in Westworld
who
or something.
He went off on Vittori. If you guys haven't listened, I mean, it's on Junkie. You can find
how,
it on the Underground.
How long did you go today? 20-something minutes?
It was roughly 20-ish minutes, yeah.
He went to his routine today. But he did rip on some people. Ripped on Vittori. Ripped on
Vittori,
Dewey Cooper.
Dewey Cooper.
Ripped on Abu A little
Did
bit.
Rip on Izzy?
Ripped on the German fans. Ripped on Izzy. Said he wants a shot at Izzy.
Ripped on that poor
yeah,
kid.
Yeah, dude.
From
he's, what was the whole thing about? Yeah, he had the whole thing about Izzy, and he's like, you haven't seen that skit where he says like, look at my black skin? And I was like, no, I've never seen that
skit.
Yeah,
because
like, I don't
old.
Think it exists.
I mean, or it has to be from the fact
when he was kickboxing over in China, like he carried the Chinese flag at times, and I think like you know he like tried to not represent himself as one of the people, but was just like thankful for the opportunity to compete there or whatever, and tried to support the people or whatever.
And that's
but I never heard
into
him
the
say
culture
anything.
Too.
Playing
I mean, like,
the culture.
I mean, like if you're over there and they want to see pride in their country. What's a better way to get them to completely love you than to say,
I'm
like, I'm one,
yep.
I'm one of you. I'm one of you.
I'm carrying
know?
Your flag.
But nobody
and in
takes
fairness,
it seriously.
Didn't he later then? Okay. Didn't Sean then later go, you know what I hate? I hate when people go to a new country and they don't represent that new country.
That's true. He did
He
that.
Literally just contradicted himself. He's like, what is Adesanya doing representing himself as part of China? And then later on he goes, you know what I hate? When people move to America and they say, I'm from so-and-so. No. You're from here. You're in America. You need to represent your new country.
Represent that new place. Carry that flag.
See? Oh, see, Sean's just out here just saying stuff.
How long was that? He was, you know, and it's funny because it's like he immediately switched. It didn't even like he finished really railing in one area. It felt like in his mind he was like, come on, I can get some more in before this interview's over. I can pick some new groups. 25 minutes. 25 minutes and 54 seconds. But roughly, I guess that's what the logo at the end. So it's roughly, 25 and a half minutes, something like that. Where he literally went off on so many groups where it felt like before maybe he went longer. He went off on fat chicks.
Put women back in the kitchen.
Oh, my God.
That was uncomfortable.
That was super uncomfortable. You know, why we give them voting rights? The next thing I knew, they try to vote out alcohol and blah, 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 and this.
Yeah, we shouldn't have allowed women to vote.
Yeah, we need them back in the kitchen, something. I felt like that I feel like he said something close to that before, but today it felt harder, like he went more in.
Here's what's interesting is there is –
I think it's maybe because the legislature is trying to take rights away from women.
There is – oh, gosh. There is something interesting to be said, not about putting women back in the kitchen, but about developing a family. Like, for instance, myself and my wife, when we had a kid, we made a decision. Look, I will work. I will pay for everything. You stay home so that we have somebody with our kid at all times. We have somebody that's in – you know, like that's able to help out with the schoolwork and the homework. And there's always somebody taking them to school and always somebody picking them up from school. Not we're trying to, you know, but that was a luxury we had and a decision we made. And I don't think a lot of Americans had that choice because everything's so expensive. They need both incomes to survive. Now, is there an interesting discussion about like he was like, you know, TikTok's raising our kids now and the family unit isn't the way it used to be because everybody's both working and the kids home by themselves. And there is something to be said for that. And there is a there is a depth of discussion I think to maybe have about, but the answer is not. So put the women back in the kitchen, like dude. I mean,
it definitely seems like lately, and even well, maybe it's, I feel like it's been more so. But I think probably since Trump was president or whatever, there's been more of this like conservative push to get back to what they call like traditional roles, where the men work and then the women stay at home and raise a family. Right. It's just been crazy. And then it's just like it's almost now like this just this crazy flag that some people just bring back up, you know, and they're just like, you know, fuck the fact that if a woman wants to work and have something, and a woman might have a better paying job than you and just out-smoke you. It's like, but you feel like, no, she should be your property.
Yeah, that's trash. Because like, it could totally be the other way around. Like I'm saying, like,
I'd
it
love
could be
to
like,
have a great woman just take care. I can cook the shit out. Of
I
some
cook
shit.
Better than my wife does, man. I
can be a kept man.
I'm telling you, man. If she can get
but
that
I
job,
but I do like working. And if somebody has talent and has passions and something, you should be there to support.
Yeah,
support them and nurture their dreams and their goals. And if that either means by financially helping them, by you either being the breadwinner and creating something that they can do something, or let them fulfill their passion, let them do whatever, and then you guys have two incomes. Like, what the fuck's wrong with two incomes?
Two
like,
incomes
when did that become?
Good.
When
two
did that become like a bad thing? You know,
two incomes is nice.
It's just
makes can make life a little easier.
I think it just goes back to that like. People with like want to have ownership. They want to take ownership of women. They want to take ownership of their bodies and what they're able to do with it. And I think they also want to be like, just sit down, be quiet, be pretty.
Right.
Work in the kitchen, make me food, whatever. I'm going to go work and then I'm going to come back, you know, but you're my property. There's like this conservative, crazy push. Like, I get it. If I see, you know, now trying to enter the dating scene again, like looking on the dating apps and stuff.
You open out there,
you see that shit.
We didn't have this discussion. I know. You're breaking news
trying.
On the air.
I'm just trying, but like the scene is fucking changed, dude. Like, cause you'll see like the key phrases, like the people say shit like, you know, oh, I'm looking for a man that has traditional values. You know, get back to the traditional roles, which is key for just saying them saying
take
like they want to take care of me. Everybody just wants to fucking be taken care of. I'm like, that's cool and that's great. But I'm like, bro, I can barely take care of myself. I'm like, but we can have a partnership. We can try to build something together. Like, that's kind of more what I'm into. But it's like, if you just want me to pay for you to do whatever, I'm like, I'll just be fucking single. Just spend my money on me and like, fuck it, you know. But I get it. But you just see some more of that stuff. And more power to it. If a woman wants that, that's cool. If that's her decision. But let's not force that decision on these roles of how genders are supposed to act in society. They're not property, they're not whatever, but if she wants to be a kept fucking woman and that's her decision, hey, good on you, you know, who fucking cares, whatever. It just tends, it's very prevalent on the date on the dating apps.
I didn't realize that.
It's fucking hard right now. But when you work in an MMA bubble and all you do is work and whatever, and then if you go home, now I just go to the gym or I just fucking chill, it's hard meeting people. And then you look at like these dating apps, it's fucking nightmare, man. It's a nightmare. But it makes me realize I got to get the F out of the house if anything's going to happen.
Well, Sean Strickland will give you some dating advice, man. He helped out the kid from UNLV. He's like, I think you just got to grow some hair on your balls. And then go out there and slay some
UNLV women. And then what do you say? Like, oh, like when you 10 more years or whatever. He's like, you'll come back. You'll be slaying that UNLV. I was like, okay, so you're telling him to get 10 years older and then go back to the college pool.
They stay the same age. They do.
Why do you think I want to work God sports? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God. Sean Strickland, what an adventure. Now, all right, listen. For all this chaos and this craziness, I mean, we know what to expect at this point. When Sean Strickland comes in, you're not going to get a ton of real serious
answers.
And
I know we're going to get heat because after all the shit that he jumped on, I haven't even looked at the comments. And I just feel like tonight and tomorrow – it's going to be again. We're used to it. We understand like what Sean's going to bring, and you're able to kind of tune shit out. I know there's going to be this fucking roar of people saying, "Why didn't you call him out on this? Why didn't you take him to on this? Why didn't you go after him for this?" I'm like, we just want to get through it.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to, every time I see Sean Strickland, it's not going to be my job to say, "Okay, Sean, it's my job to make you feel like a piece of shit for your beliefs." You already know that you're kind of a piece of shit.
He says it.
He says it himself. Like, he understands and gets it. But, I mean, there is still the point of Sean, and he said it on times when he admits it. He's like, I had a fucked up upbringing. I know I'm not right in the head. And he says things because he feels uncomfortable a lot of shit. So I think there's a part of him where he's like,
defense mechanism.
It's a defense mechanism. Yeah. I need to get so crazy outlandish where you're either just going to think everything I think is crazy and then you're going to stop paying attention to me. Because it's when you don't say the crazy shit and when you really start to have a conversation with me that I have to start thinking about the things inside myself, and that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather be blah, 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 and then you just kind of stop talking to me, and then I can go about my business. You go about your business. You know, I definitely – defense mechanism, I think, is the right –
100%.
I think he believes in a lot of the shit, but I think also there's parts of it – where
he's a little bit socially awkward and
socially
uncomfortable,
and he's just trying
says,
to get
I'll just
past
say
things.
Weird shit,
yeah,
and that's that'll be 100%. I agree 100%. With that. But you know what's funny is like, so I don't think I don't understand, like, and I get it, like some of the stuff. I mean, some of the stuff he says I think is uncomfortable. I think it's dumb. I think it's ill-informed or whatever. But like, I don't feel like it's my job to sit there and correct him on his beliefs. Like,
right,
that's
you'd be fighting
his
everybody
thoughts.
In the world.
Yeah,
I mean, like Sean, that's not unique to just Sean Strickland. There's a million people out there that have views and stuff that make me uncomfortable that I don't agree with, but it's not my thing. I'm not going to go out and be like, hey, bro, let's sit down. We're going to hash this out right now until you believe how I believe. What good is that? That's not our job. Like, if somebody wants to have shitty fucking beliefs and come off pretty rude and pretty crazy, who cares?
That's the way he feels about stuff.
That's the way he feels about shit. I mean, like, you just don't surround yourself with those people, you know? If you're uncomfortable with the shit somebody says, just don't listen to them, you know?
Yeah.
But ultimately, I mean, I've had a lot of great conversations with Sean, you know? As shitty as it sounds, I like the guy.
I do too.
He has some really crazy things and very, very beliefs and ideas that are just crazy that I'm like, bro, I would never say that, and that makes me uncomfortable that you say that. But I'm like, but there's still parts of you I like. You still entertain me, you know. Would he be somebody I take home to my family? Well, part of my family would probably fucking dig what he says. So, but he still would not be a guy I take home to my family and show to, like, people I care about, because he might say something that upsets them, and then I'd get upset. But can I take him in doses and find some enjoyment in some of the shit he says? Yeah. Can I find some of the stuff that he says off-putting? Yeah. But I don't write him off, but I also don't need to make an agenda where I need to change this guy, because we can't, if the whole thing of life is making everybody believe with your views, that's wrong. That's why we see so many problems already right now. People are saying, my view is the way it has to be. Yep. You have to believe in what I say. And if not, we're just going to keep butting our heads, and we're going to keep fighting and arguing until one of us finally gives up. You know, like, I'm much more on the side of, like, you know, if there's people that say shit that I don't want to be around, I just don't be around them. But I can take them in small doses. And even people that I find that, I can still probably find some things that we can connect on and things that I could still find that I like about that person. Mm-hmm. I inherently don't want to hate people. They might say shit that I'm like, dude, that's very hateful or whatever. It doesn't make me hate that person. I still can try to find some good in them and hopefully find the humanity of what's going on in their head to why they would say maybe some of those things. And I think we've seen that in Sean. We've seen there's reasons behind. Sean's, I don't think, he's not a hateful person in nature. His environment has made him a certain way. And this is, like we said, defense mechanism. Another thing, this is how he deals with what he's going through. He has a crazy occupation. And if he needs to say crazy shit to fucking ease his mind and allow him to do what it is, he's going to do that. What do I do?
And by all accounts, he really did have a terrible childhood.
Yes. And I just remove yourself from the situation. We can't change everybody to be exactly how we want. Remove yourself from the situation and find joy in something else.
I agree. I agree. All right, listen, as far as picks on this, what are your thoughts? Because, you know.
I was one of the only ones in staff that went to Abus.
Did you really?
I did.
Wow.
I remember seeing something where I watched some footage of Magomedov, and I thought he was just a stud. He's got a little bit of reach. He's got about an inch in height. And I think he's got about an inch in reach.
He's definitely got more power.
He's got more power.
Or at least a history of finishing.
And the thing with Strickland is that he's got durability to get out. I mean, like, he's so durable. But Sean goes forward. You punish him, he goes forward. But that's it. He goes forward. It's not a lot of crazy movements to the side. It's not a lot of awkward movies. He's not hiding stuff. He's going forward, and he wears these guys down. Now, if a boost can't take a punch, and if he gets flustered and he's not able to get his game plan out, if he never establishes the reach, if he never establishes distance, and Sean puts too much pressure where he's able to kind of control that pace, and Magomedov never gets anything off, then yeah, Strickland's going to probably grind it out. But I think if Abus can, like, keep it together, I think he's got the talent and I think he's got the power to do it. And I think it's going to be the lack of variety in Sean's overall game plan that will be his downfall. Mm-hmm. You know, he needs his person on the opposite end to tire out and to take enough damage that they stop being able to hurt him. I mean, we've seen Sean take crazy, crazy damage and he still goes forward until he can't, you know. But again, part of it too is me trying to play the picks game at our staff picks, because everybody's picking Strickland for this. So this is one of the ones where I picked a guy that I think has a pretty darn good chance to do it. So part of that is that. Part of it, I do believe that he does have a good chance, and I think Strickland is. It's one thing to say, like, oh, I see the weakness in Sean's game, but if I got in the octagon with him, he'd fucking smoke me,
yep.
You know, but you put another high-level guy, I think he's going to be able to work it out. So
I think this is a much more competitive fight than a lot of people believe.
I do, too.
He's a small favorite. So I think the odds makers gave Abus the proper respect. I just don't think a lot of the public is, but I think this is a lot closer fight on paper than a lot of people.
I wonder if they did that partially because they know money's going to come in for Strickland, because just Strickland being Strickland,
the
name.
So
they just kind of set it up to where he's the underdog, so more people throw a bunch of money in Strickland instead of them just, you know, just easily going Strickland and not being able to get any money on a boost. Maybe now they're trying to get some money, people trying to play the favorite, which will draw the line up a little bit, and then all that Strickland push is going to come in. Because I'm pretty sure there's probably going to be a push for Strickland towards when we get closer to the fight, and probably after today when more people see this guy and they find out about him or he says stuff. I mean, love it or hate it, when people say this crazy incendiary stuff,
It gets headlines.
It gets views. So that people don't even know that he's fighting on this card, all of a sudden know he's fighting on the card. And then they're looking at the guy across, well, I've never heard of that guy. Huh. he doesn't look like anything. Oh, this American versus Russian? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, okay, yeah. Pff, I'm going to put my money on that Strickland guy, you know. So,
not a Russian. He's a German, and all the German fans, just go watch it.
I mean, is he even German?
Sean Strickland. Co-main event. Co-main event's a tough one as well. Demir Uchmagulov versus Grant Dawson. Demir, of course, who had the setback last time out against a very, very talented opponent in Arman Sarukin, and then briefly retired from the sport but came back and said, you know, I just love this too much. There was no way I could walk away from it. I knew I need this in my life. I'm back, and now I'm ready to mow through everybody. He said that, you know, after this fight, he wants Justin Gaethje because Justin Gaethje would be light work for him. He would put in the, you know, make him pay. And so, I mean, he just crazy stuff, man. I loved hearing from him and hearing that he's definitely back in the game. Meanwhile, Grant Dawson, you know, I think perennially kind of underrated, you know, just – flies under the radar a little bit, but has put together an incredible record, has done some great things, has you know, knocked his way into the rankings, and now believes, you know, that, as he said today, man, that everything he's done up to this point will be a failure if he doesn't become UFC champion someday. I mean, so to hear that kind of drive and that kind of focus, man, was pretty awesome. I'm torn on this one, man. I really am torn on this one. And you look at the odds are pretty much dead even on it as well. So, you know, Uchmagulov was kind of the hot commodity until he had that recent setback. Dawson, I think, is, as I said, underrated. I think a lot better than people want to give him credit for. And you know, they're going to kind of meet, and we'll see, you know, kind of this crossroads bout, I guess. Man, this is a tough one. I'm excited for it. And to me, it's a coin flip. I got to be honest with you, I don't have a good feel either way on who should be the winner.
I picked Dawson initially because, like you said, I mean, he's the guy that just shows up and he wins, you know, even though people don't give him maybe the credit. It's crazy when you look at it. He's got a 19-1-1 record. Like, that's ridiculous. Demir, 24-2-0. I mean, it's crazy when you look at their stats. I mean, like, it makes sense that they're a co-main event. I mean, you got two guys with those kind of records. You think that more people would be more familiar with their names, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I leaned Dawson. It's funny, once I saw Uchmagulov, and I even turned around to John in the press, and I was like, dude, I kind of forgot about this dude. And I was like, this dude's a total badass. And that's when usually I start having doubts of my initial staff picks, because we have to have our staff picks in before like 9 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesday. So I put my picks in, I think, Monday or Tuesday. Kind of, you know, I scanned over the fight card and kind of did my initial picks. And then I saw him, and I started doubting myself. I was like, man, should I make the switch? And then after kind of talking to you, too, I was like, one, this is another. Again, this whole fight card's kind of been for me like a play to try to get back to the top. I'm five picks behind.
In.
I closed the gap up. I was 10 behind. And then this last weekend, we had multiple events, so I was able to make up some ground. But I hate to, like, just pick to play the game because, you know, that's how I started the year off wrong. But in this one, I think I just picked Dawson, man, and just toughness. He just shows up when you don't expect him to. And I think Demir's going to be the kind of fight that brings the dog out of him. And we'll see good things. So I can't, after having our little talk in the room, I think I'm going to stick with my Dawson pick, but man, Demir is the real deal, dude. And I like to say I'll withhold judgment until Friday. Check them away and see how they are. See if they struggled when you see them in the face-offs. Because we're actually, since it's an Apex show, we're going to see everybody immediately after the weigh-in. So it's not like we got to wait till late in the evening Friday to kind of see how they are. We're going to see them shortly after the weigh-in. So depending on how they look and the size, I'm interested to see the size difference. Because I didn't look at the actual height, but I don't know if Dawson's – Demir is not the biggest of dudes, but Dawson's not the biggest. So Dawson is 5'10", 72-inch reach, 29 years old, and then Demir is – he can't be much bigger.
They're 5'10"? Both 5'10", yeah.
Holy cow. 74? Does he have a 2-inch
reach? Demir has a 2-inch reach advantage. He's 3 years older.
Whew. But I don't really think of him as like, oh, this crazy guy that uses that reach. So it's not like the reach is going to make a big difference. I think he wants to try to punish and get in there and get a hold of Grant.
I think the real key here, you know, if you look at the stats behind it, I think is going to be the interesting part. And he talked about it. You know, Dawson, a grappler at heart, and he certainly is. Dawson averages 3.89 takedowns per 15 minutes. Meanwhile, Uchmagulov has a 75% takedown defense rate.
Yeah.
So I think that's where a big key is going to be.
What's funny, because you look at Dawson, you look at all these finishes by rear naked choke, that's because he punished him and then he gets him onto the ground. Mm-hmm. And then he finishes it off. But look at that. Rear naked choke Mark Madsen, who's an Olympic wrestler. Jared Gordon, who's a fucking badass, beat him. Leonardo Santos, Derek Minner. I mean,
and as he said, he draws people into that deep water. He kind of wears them down. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I love that fight. I really do love that fight. The rest of the card, I mean, look, Max Griffin versus Michael Morales could be a really good fight. There's another intriguing one as well. You know, Michael Morales, this young, undefeated kid. He's had a year away. He looks like an absolute stud.
Yes.
And he's excited for the moment. Meanwhile, Max Griffin, the veteran who's like, I love how open and honest Max is about everything. And he's just like, man, I was pissed off when they gave me this dude. I'm like, oh, I see. Like, you're trying to feed me to the young kid that you're trying to get the old man beat. Like, all right, I see. I'm not that guy, you know. And then he said earlier in the week he was taking a walk and he just had a revelation. He was like, no, this is a gift. Like, they're giving you this, you know, young dude that everybody thinks is somebody, but he doesn't have the experience that you have. He doesn't have the knowledge that you have, and this is going to be your opportunity to show him. And
I love his belief.
I love his belief, and I love his mindset. Belief,
but that there's a borderline where he's walking that line of overlooking an opponent. He is carefully treading that line right now. I mean, he's got to watch it. I mean, if he thinks that this kid has nothing to challenge him with, if he thinks that this is in fact a gift, and he's not, and he's just like, dude, I just got to show up, and it's just going to work itself out. That's a really dangerous game plan to go in against a guy that's really, really powerful. But, man, when Max is firing on all cylinders, man, Max is the real deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had plenty of times where Max was like the guy that was like, dude, when he got on these weird streaks, he's like, dude, title shot's going to be in his near future. And then something always comes up and it sets him back, you know. But I love the belief in himself. He had the dope-ass hair, which he said, took 6 hours to get braided.
6 hours to braid his hair.
That's so crazy.
That's incredible. Yeah, Michael Morales is the favorite in that one, by the way, and it does look like a kid with a really bright future. Ariane Lipski and Melissa Gatto in the all-Brazilian women's flyweight matchup there.
Or otherwise known as the
You're excited
oh
on that
God,
one.
Oh, my God. They're so fine.
Gatto is the favorite there. Ismael Bonfim is back after his incredible USC debut. He's a pretty heavy favorite over at Benoit St. Denis.
Yeah.
And then the
middle.
I think
he's going to smoke him.
Yeah, he definitely could. And that would be unfortunate, but yeah.
I mean, St. Denis is a nice enough guy, but man, Ismael, he's fucking scary.
He's good. He's good. He's
a
really
scary
good.
Family.
And one that I think should be, I'm really intrigued by as well, that I think should be fireworks, is Bruno Ferreira versus Nursultan Rajabayev, I believe. Let's see if we got it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to have to go to that.
We might not have his pronunciation. Let's see if they've got it.
Which this one was interesting. You were asking questions in English, which were getting said to
Nursultan
in Russian. He was answering back in Uzbeki to a guy off to the side that was then in turn answering in Russian back to the translator who translated then to English.
That's crazy. Yeah, it was a little bit difficult, but we do not have his pronunciation available yet. I'm sure they'll be collecting that today as part of his media rounds. But yeah, I mean, the dude's got 40 plus fights. He's like, I mean, there's it. 2019, I want to say, he fought 13 times that year, which
holy
is
cow,
insane.
He's 29 years old too. He's a big boy, 6'4".
He's younger than Ferreira, which is crazy.
Yeah, he's been fighting a lot. I mean, but when you look at the guy, he definitely looked like the fighter type. He didn't look like a guy that pads his number with like crazy whatever. But who knows? I mean, from the region when they're coming to some of these. You never know what's going on in some of these like crazy Russian regions and maybe Uzbekistan regional fights, you know, like numbers are weird. So yeah, maybe there are some crazy like padded fights or whatever, but when you look at the guy, he looks like a fighter. He definitely looks like a guy that's been in there a lot.
Definitely does. So I'm anxious to see that one. We mentioned Kevin Lee and Hinat.
there you go.
Portuguese. Joanderson Brito versus Weston Wilson. I don't know if you've seen the odds on this one, but Joanderson Brito was opened at a -800 and has been bet up to a -1400.
Holy cow.
Yeah, a lot of people were not – and I feel so bad for Weston because I saw his announcement that he was going to be in everybody. He was just trashing the guy. I was like, why did you get signed by the UFC? How did you make it in the UFC? This guy is not worthy of being in the UFC, which sucks for a guy that's just kind of chasing his dream. But You know, a lot of people were very upset about that. He was victorious last time out. It was under the Tough Enough banner.
That's got to be it, right?
It was the same card that Muhammad Naimov got signed off of.
Really? It's got to be that. I think when people are looking at some of the names of these organizations that he fought on, that even though some of these other ones could be legit, like Valor Fighting, some of the other ones could be like legit organizations, but I saw Tough Enough, I was like, oh, okay, this guy's coming off the Tough Enough scene. No offense to the Tough Enough guys, but it just feels like, wow, it definitely feels like a big step up.
Big step up.
A big step up in competition, whereas Joe Anderson's been fucking doing it at the UFC level for a while now. I mean, that's tough. That's a big difference. We've seen guys come in last minute, you know, that have plenty of experience, plenty of heart, plenty of whatever. Then they get popped a couple times, like when Jim Miller just got fed that dude recently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy's like a legit that probably I'd have to pull up that fight. I bet he fought Tough Enough or something. And then he got in there and it was not a good day.
Yeah, so. He's fought a couple of newcomers as of late, which is kind of wild. So,
yeah.
Rounds out, you got a ranked women's featherweight, or it's women's bantamweights, but they're fighting at featherweight. Yana Santos and Carol Hosa, which I thought was a little bit weird. Because we know the
Carol
featherweight.
Who?
Hosa?
I was going to say, did you say Rosa?
No. Hosa.
Oh, okay.
Hosa. but I thought that was kind of weird because we know – I don't know if that was just because it was put together on short notice. Carol, I don't – anyway, we know featherweight's going away, so I don't know if they're just – if they have to be obligated to give these fighters that are featherweights, do they have to give them
– featherweight belts?
Yeah, I guess they have to, right? I guess maybe they have to, is to honor me. Because I think it would be easy to be like, hey, I know we've been fighting you at featherweight. But I mean, she's had bantamweight experience, so she's not one of these ones that hasn't fought at bantamweight. So I don't know. Maybe it was just because of short notice of it or whatever. But
yeah.
But they're doing that one at featherweight. Guram Kutataladze against Elvis Brenner, which I like Guram a lot. I think he's got a lot of skill. Ivana Petrovic versus Luana Carolina, and ranked heavyweights Alexander Romanov and Blagoy Ivanov to start the night off. So, you know, should be a decent night. Again, it's not the biggest card of all. But
there's some fun ones in there.
But it should be a good one. And, of course, it's leading into an incredibly big week of international fight.
Is there something big happening here?
Yeah, you know. By the way, if you're into grappling, the Fight Pass Invitational is on Thursday night. I will be there. Myself and my son will be there. So just watching, I'm not going to be doing any media obligations there, but I always like to watch some high-level grappling. So if you're looking for some grappling, that'll be on UFC Fight Pass.
I was going to say, you know they're going to have that on Fight Pass.
Yeah, but who wants to watch it at home? I mean, let's get out of the house.
I'm
going to
watch it at
home. No, I'm not going to watch it there. I'm trying to – well, my kids –
well, that's good, you're spending time with your kids.
Exactly. It's not even my wife. It's just going to be me and my son, like just kind of a you know – father son kind of bonding thing or whatever.
She only likes that slap shit.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, is anybody slapping?
She's like, if nobody's getting slapped in the face, I don't want to watch it, man.
She's like, I hate when people are able to defend themselves. Yeah. You know, I just like it when they just have to stand there and take it like a man.
She doesn't get into grappling, man. She's more into the striking. So yeah, but plus I want to see some high level grappling. Obviously, he trains jiu-jitsu, so I want to see like the highest level and see it up close. It's different.
Craig Jones
event.
At the top. Like,
yeah,
you're gonna see some high level shit
to watch that. Up close versus on TV, I think is better. So you know, let him.
It's almost like
that.
Being able to take him to like a tutorial or something like to watch these guys to like you know you want to watch you know like I know you like this. Let's take you to see like highest level.
See what it's supposed to look like because I mean you know you're doing it, but you know see what it's supposed to look like at the highest level. And then
especially
you can understand.
That's what it is. It's not. It's not like going to an MMA match and then seeing some high level grappling within it. That's all you're going to
see. You
see
pieces of it.
Stop to finish, start to stop. I mean, like, it's incredible. And it's funny when you see, like, the MMA fights when a guy immediately drops down, he's sitting on your butt, and you're like, oh, my God, stand him up. You'll see dudes literally drop to their butt immediately, and the other guy's waiting to engage. But nobody says it. That's part of the
game. That's part of the game.
That's part of what you're seeing, you know. So it's a different mindset.
Craig Jones will sit down as soon as the thing starts.
Literally sit down.
He will sit down as soon as it starts. all right. Keeping Your Ultimate Fighter current. Did you watch this week's episode?
I did.
Connor, taking another L, 0-5 now.
Well,
man.
I mean, dude, the vets they brought in, it's interesting because all of them, you know, they left on, you know, they had their little issues why they were able to leave. But, man, now after seeing, like, now week 5 and seeing 5 wins in a row, just you almost feel bad for the prospects. Like, you're literally – these prospects, they're not spring chicken. I mean, they have good experience. But, man, there's just – something different when these fights have been starting with the pros on the opposite end, knowing, I think, maybe also to just the severity of what this opportunity and what they need to show. And they know the fact that, hey, we only have 2 rounds. You got Connor after every damn event, like, lobbying
Let
for
him
three.
Go three rounds.
Let him go for three rounds. Like, this should be it. Three rounds. Like, Connor, you know the fucking deal, bro.
31 seasons, bro. 31
and
seasons.
It's your second time coaching. Your second time coaching it.
That has made me cracked up. Like, everybody wants to see three. Let him go three. These are unfinished fights.
Like, I know he probably won the two rounds, but can you just give me a third?
Chandler just talking trash to him, too. Just like, we don't need it when we win two, buddy.
Yeah. And, well, I'm watching the preview next week's when they get
that's
physical.
That's when the big push comes. So if you haven't been watching, I guess you want to see the – the big shove.
The one that's been in all the promos from the very beginning.
This is the one, I guess, Lee Hammond, obviously. A lot of people very high on Lee Hammond. Of course, he's Connor's guy. He's a number one seed. By the way, because I was looking at that too, by the way. If you haven't been watching, we talked about the very beginning, but we haven't spent a lot of time over it. They did seed everybody from the beginning. Now, granted, they had to seed them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But so Michael Chandler right now is 5-0. And of the three remaining matchups, two of them are his number one seeds.
Interesting.
So he's still got, you know, yeah. I mean, so
I think Hammond's
going to be the big one.
Yeah, but I think they also made a point, too, to say, like, I know at least for Chandler's side, they were trying to say, like, the seeding was important, but there was still gamesmanship.
Right.
And
like,
how
if we
seeding.
Know that guy's number one and we think we
because
got
the
a good.
Because the one fought the four.
Right.
So the threes fight the two.
So if he's like, if we assume that your guy, that's going to be your number one, and we've got a matchup that we think is pretty good for that, we might just
put him
at
four. Yep.
Just because we think that's the right matchup for
yep.
him. So.
Yep. I think that's how the first one played out. I think they took out one of Connor's number ones right off the bat or something. One of the earlier fights, I think he took out his number one. I could be wrong. But. Yeah, dude. I mean, it's funny. Like we've been talking about. I thought they've still done a pretty decent job of making Connor seem involved in these things. I know we had been hearing different things that, you know, practices and at times had been hard because he, you know, was always showing up late. But they're. I think the edits certainly makes it seem like he's there. He's present. He's involved. They still have. They showed that good moment where they were on like the rowing machine.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're sort of having a team bonding thing, and then he got on there as well. So I mean, like he has these moments where he really does bond with the guys, and I think that's they're definitely getting their money's worth out of it. And the TV, the people get to see Connor in the show.
It's you know it, there was a moment a couple episodes back, and I think a lot of people probably made fun of it, but I actually thought it was pretty cool to show Connor's kind of mental strength. It was when he was talking about like the pain, you know, and he was like, you got to visualize the pain.
Yeah.
And you take it out, you know, and you remove that pain from your body. I mean, I can see a lot of people looking at that going, like, what kind of horse shit is that? Like, it's pain. You can't make it. But that's the kind of mindset that Connor yeah. has. Like, I am visualizing this. I'm going to pull it out of my body. I'm going to remove it from my body, and yeah. I'm not going to allow it to. It's like, that dude has mental focus on another yeah. level. You know what I mean? It is cool for people to see that because, look, man, this is a mental game, dude. And if
yeah.
you can have that type of confidence, it's – I mean,
100%.
Look, who doesn't second-guess themselves every day in life? Now, imagine yep. going into a cage fight against another trained killer. Like, you're going to second-guess yourself. So.
And I think anybody in any aspect, whether it be business or whatever, if you can have a chance to have someone that's a proven winner in some aspect and has a mindset that's gotten them to something that you aspire – and if they give that little piece of where their head's at and how they treat situations, why not fucking soak that up, you
yep.
know? So, yeah, I mean, there's times, I mean, you know, say what you will about, like, you know, whether Connor was late at practice and when he was showing whatever, he's giving some gems at these guys that these guys are obviously getting something out of it. But I definitely think there's a difference in what the fighters that were training under Chandler are getting as opposed to what Connor. And maybe the prospects need the mindset. They need to hearing the mindset of a guy that's a proven winner and a proven just superstar in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the pros don't need – I don't need your mental whatever, little whatever. I need technique. I need the tricks. I need something to sharpen my overall thing, you know, my overall game. Whereas the prospects, they want the technique. They want the stuff, but they also want that motivation that's going to take them to the next level.
Right.
And that's why I think that the combination of the teams and who they have over top of them, it worked out really, really unique, and it worked out perfect. So I can't fault Connor because he's obviously giving stuff to the prospects that they like. I don't blame the losses on Connor's coaching. I think it's just a matter of you
tough
have prospects
matchups.
Going into
I agree.
Absolutely tough matchups.
I think that's a great point because if you're not actually watching the show and you're just hearing Connor 0-5, he must be doing a crap job.
Right.
I don't think that's fair.
No, because Connor's got great coaches there with him.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're doing a lot of the work. It's just you got prospects going up against guys that have already been to the highest level where these guys are trying to get to. You know, like they're coming in as they wouldn't ever admit it and say that they're coming in as the underdogs, but they're coming in as underdogs. You know, they're fighting guys that have been there. So I don't fault anything in terms of like, you know, what the overall level, because I think the guys, all of them coming in are all studs. They have great athletic skill and they already have good technique. I just blame the fact of, you know, you're just running into a bigger dog that night that just has a better fight. You know, these guys are having great moments. Even the last one, the fight with Brad. I mean, like there were some of those rounds that while Brad was on top, you know, controlling. So I can see where Judge leaned that way. He wasn't doing a lot of damage. In fact, you know, the guy on the ground was actually getting some really, really good shots. It's just, it's tough when you're not able to get up and establish yourself back on your feet. Cause then the judges are like, oh, okay, you know, you're sitting here underneath taking shots. Yeah, you're giving some shots back, but that's got to be a bad show. So I can see where if there was ever a fight that possibly started leaning toward Connor would maybe get his third round, this was definitely the closest. But it still, in my mind, was close. It was 100% two rounds to Brad. So it's interesting, but yeah, I mean, I don't fault the judging or the coaching for why these prospects are losing. I just think they're running into better fighters on the night.
I completely agree with that. So,
but it's good though.
If you haven't, I have been enjoying the show. Like I said, I watch it every year anyway. I know a lot of people don't. I watch it anyway. But if you're not one that watches and you haven't been watching this season, the previous show, the famous push that we see is in the next episode. So if you want to tune in for that one, do that.
I do like – well, it's funny. I do like the fact of having the little sort of teaser beforehand that we can watch it because I can fast-forward. I still find myself fast-forwarding. So
do you really?
I do. So, like, if you're watching it live, I would say maybe wait till afterwards. If you're the kind of guy like me that wants to be able to skip through some of the, like, if they're sitting in the kitchen talking, like, I'm like, I just kind of want to fast-forward through some of that shit. But if you're watching it live, you can't fast-forward. But if you watch it after the fact where you can DVR through it, some of that shit, I never find myself watching it all the way, like, at real-time speed, I fast-forward through something.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Hey, listen, I did want to real quickly mention this PFL situation.
But a trick to that is that when you get to the fight, if you are fast-forwarding, you see how much time
you know
left,
exactly
you kind
of
tell how the fight's going
to
be.
Yeah. That's why I try not to, so I don't really know how much is left.
How
so
the
I don't, that way I don't know exactly what
that's
it is.
That's true.
All right, listen, this PFL situation, I did want to briefly mention it. So I tweeted the other day that I didn't really like the decision they made, and I stand by that I don't like the decision they made. Of course, I think most people are probably familiar with the situation at this point, but you know, Natan Schulte and Hausman Fio had a fight. They're friends. They're really, really good friends. Godfather of each other, kids. And, I mean, the relationship is extensive. The fight turned out less than competitive, I guess you would say. And the PFL came in afterwards and suspended both of them for having a non-competitive fight and ended up removing Natan from the playoffs. And it did allow Shane Burgos back in. It actually got brought up today at the media day. Grant Dawson was asked about it, and he admitted his frustrations with it. I did have a chance to talk to some people behind the scenes, all off record, and you know this was, but basically the way it was relayed to me is that this was not qualified from the PFL's point of view as a bad fight. It was qualified as a non-fight, and because they viewed it as a non-fight, it was in violation of the contract, and they took the steps that they believe necessary to protect the sanctity of the tournament. And I'll be honest with you, and I even said that in my initial tweet, that I do applaud them for trying to keep the sanctity of their results and the tournaments intact. Because of the way their system is set up, if two fighters were to collude together, like for instance, you know, if there was a certain situation where, you know, fighters mathematically figured out that, hey, if we just go to a decision, you know, we'll shut out so-and-so that can't get in. You know, I don't know how the exact math would situation work, but if they figured out, hey, if I beat you in this round, we both go through to the playoffs, or if we do this, so, hey, let's do that.
Like, I need 4 points, so I need to get this.
Right,
get 4 points.
You're already in because you got
in.
Six.
Yep.
You got six last time out, so if you lose but I get four, then we both qualify.
And we shut out so-and-so.
And we shut
that's
out that.
In the back because they make a big point to put them on the screen as they're sitting there watching the fight and they're seeing the outcome, but to know that somebody can easily.
Yep. So because of that, I do applaud them for their, you know, decision in that way to protect the sanctity of the tournament. However, and I said it this way, I do think in this particular situation they have to take a little bit of responsibility for the matchmaking that they made. I mean, it was not unknown that these two guys absolutely did not want to fight each other unless they absolutely had to. The depth of their relationship has been the subject of many pre-fight video pieces that have gone in there. So much so that the commentators, as the fight were unfolding, like, weren't completely shocked by what was unfolding. They were just like, this is what happens when it's somebody that you're A, very familiar with, and B, that you're friends with. So I just want to stand by that. I think a lot of people are saying, well, they just wanted to sneak Burgos into the playoffs. I don't think that's really what the PFL did here. The PFL has a number of free agent signings that didn't make the playoffs, and they're not trying to shift things around. And while they're very high on Burgos, I don't think they're so high on him that they were willing to, we got to slide him in. He's going to be the difference between whether or not this season is profitable or this season is valuable. But so I get it. It was kind of a tough situation for them, and I guess maybe I understand their rationale a little more. I wish they would talk on record about it. I wish they would actually have a conversation. The executives of the company would actually have a conversation about it. So far, they're not. They're just saying to anybody that asks, just go check out the our original statement. That says everything. I don't like that. I wish it was.
Doesn't.
I know, which it does.
It
yeah.
says nothing.
It's like we are aware that there is an issue and we'll be looking into it. Like, I don't know. So I think they dropped the ball here, man. I understand. It's a weird thing because a lot of people are accusing them of being crooked. I do not find them to be crooked. I do not find that what they're trying to do here is to be shady. I think they are actually trying to do the right thing here. But I think in this particular situation, given that they made the matchup between the two friends, I just wish maybe they would say, hey, take some responsibility, own up for it, and say, look, we're going to reinstate Natan in this one. But just FYI, maybe we rush to judgment here, but guys, gals, we want everybody to see this is how serious we are about your performances here. We cannot allow anybody to make an agreement, to collude, to work together, to affect the outcomes of fights in our organization.
But even with that, to make an agreement to collude, there has to be proof of that.
True.
You can't just say, I'm pretty sure they probably worked something out without proof. I mean, I know this isn't a legal or a court thing, but there is a precedent that they set.
Right.
I mean, and the idea of, like, you win, you move forward. You can't just backtrack and say, oh, well, there was a possibility. I just didn't like how it went. And, we want to make sure that there's nothing, there's no fight fixing, no whatever. I mean, we have no proof that anything happened.
But we just think they did.
We just think that something was fishy.
Had the commission said something,
right?
Now you're in a different position.
It's the commission's job to say whether some shit acted up.
Right? And I get what they're doing because this is unique. Like, for any other fight organization, if two people fix a fight, that really only affects that fight.
Yep.
Because of the PFL's format, it affects everybody in the division. It affects a lot of people. So I get why they're so aggressive with this.
And it's double punishment for, like, Natan. One, you're taken out of the thing, and now your chance to win that $1 million is gone as well. It's not that you just lost your fight bonus or whatever for that night. You're, in effect, you are done. This tournament is now over. Your shot at that $1 million is done from nothing that we can show.
And, oh,
that
by the
you've
way,
done something.
A former winner that's done it before.
Yes.
So it's not as if you're saying, well, I mean, of course he has a shot, but what was he really going to do? Like, no, the guy's done it before.
He's
so
done it.
You might have just taken $1 million out of his pocket.
It's so crazy.
It's not
a good look. And we saw today, remember, it was a Grant Dawson that
Grant
was just
Dawson,
like,
yep.
He's like, boycott.
Boycott PFL.
I think
it just sucks because they've done so much. I've been such a supporter of their product. This one hurt, man. It just feels like it was a bad decision. It feels like it throws their whole format and their whole situation into question, into turmoil. I wish they would slow down a little bit and say, because did you hear anybody after that fight? Was there any kind of backlash or outcry of, like,
they didn't even give it a chance for it to happen. Because it was like the decision was made by, like, the next day.
Yes.
Like, they gave it no chance for the fight to breathe and have people say, oh, there was something fishy or I just didn't like it. People would just been like, oh, that fight sucked. And then they get on with their day.
Yeah.
And then it's done.
Well, it was two friends, so what did you say?
Brought it to light. By them making that decision, they threw it in everybody's face. And I got everybody saying, like, yes, it was a shitty fight. But, dude, what you guys did was 10 times worse than what we just saw.
And, dude, like, think about it. Like, it's so crazy because – and I didn't even think about this. It just dawned on me right now. this is one thing is in the gentleman that I was talking to, one of the conversations I was having, I said, look, here's the thing that bothers me about this is that as much as we all as fans of the sport do try to say, hey, this is a sport. It's a sport. It's a sport. It is a sport. But it is hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
It is a fist fight. And so, you know, I see a lot of people going, well, don't sign up for the season if you're not willing to fight everybody in there. I get that. From a point of view, you are right about that. You're not inaccurate about that. But it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
To go in there and punch a friend. And I think about, you know, you guys that went through the Train Alta program, right? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Not easy. Like,
right.
And you guys are just dudes that, like, spent 10 weeks around
yeah.
each other or whatever.
I didn't want to fight my buddy. I was going to let you know.
Yeah.
My buddy hit me up to say, hey, by the way, we can get tickets for Sunday that we want to go to this game.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is my buddy that works for, like, the Aviators. So I'm like, I didn't want to fight him then, but
right.
they kept trying to push. I was like, bro, this is the only guy I really got close in this class. It's like, I don't do it. He's not my kid's godfather.
Right.
He's not my longtime training partner that I, you know, blood, sweat, and my brother.
Yeah, you trained together for 3 months.
And I didn't want to
fight
him.
And you're like, I don't want to fight this dude.
I'm like, I like him.
So it's like, a lot easier to just be like, just, you know, oh, man, you got to be willing to fight anybody. Cool. We did. We went in there. And I honestly, was it a shitty fight? Yeah, it was. Did they make a complete mockery of it? Like, I mean, maybe they could have been a little bit more aggressive in the grappling because at that point, you know, you could break a leg. But you have a less chance of hurting somebody than you do
yeah.
like a concussive blow. So maybe if they'd have, hey, you know, maybe we're not going to punch each other in the face a lot, but less. But again, even then, that's more colluding than what
yeah.
I think they did. You know what I mean?
Go, bro, I'm going to take your back right now.
Yeah.
Here. Take my neck. Take my neck. Okay,
yeah. I'll be honest. I didn't like it. And I'm not saying it taints everything and that, and they're going to go away and blah, 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 blah. But this was a bad decision.
Yeah.
And I just hope, you know, if they're not willing to go back on it, and I get it. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're not willing to. What's done is done. We got to move forward. You know, we think we did the right thing. I just hope they'll at least soak in everything. Soak in all the feedback. Soak in all the criticism and don't allow themselves to be in a position like that again and to maybe take safeguards against this. Like, you know, again, had this fight happened in the playoffs, well, at that point the seeding is the seeding. What are we supposed to do about it? But those preliminary matches, and I think it was Danny Rubenstein that had like a great point, was like, hey, man, you know what they should do is just like announce the season when the season starts. Like, what are the regular season fights? If you want to be a real sport, every other real sport has. Now, granted, things change. People get hurt, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. So you can't do it exactly that way. But it just did seem like a really weird decision to make these two dudes fight against each other when like
yep.
you kind of knew this was the outcome that happened was more likely than unlikely.
Yeah, and I think just a lasting thought on that is that when people look back on this situation, who's going to have the take the bigger black eye for this incident? And it's not going to be the two fighters. It's going to be the way that PFL
great
handled
point.
It. People are just going to be like, all they're going to remember is that PFL made a bad decision on this, you know, and nobody, that's the crazy thing about the fight. They should
great
have just
point.
Let the fight happen and people would have forgot about it.
But nobody would have said a word.
Nobody would remember it. They just it would be a blip on the screen and at some point until somebody brought up how that was a shitty fight and they'd be like, yeah, that was. And then they move on. But
I can't
now
even imagine
it made
anybody,
a big spectacle.
I can't
it.
Even imagine anybody in the division
yeah.
but would even say something.
Yeah.
They would because they know. Because those fighters know. Man, you fight your best friend. It's not going to be a great
yeah.
fight. I wish I could find it, man. I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it. And I think it took place in a Q&A, which is why I couldn't find it. And I guess maybe nobody wrote a story about it. But I remember GSP one time saying that, like, he, you know, how do I fight a friend? I think it was in regards to potentially fighting Nate Marquardt, if I remember the situation right. If anybody could find it to me and send it to me, I'd love to see it. But I remember this quote because it stood out to me. He was
boy,
like,
if there's a guy that needs a punch in the face, it's Nate.
Nate Marquardt.
He's certainly a loving individual.
Oh, my gosh, that's funny. But I remember GSP saying, like, you know, you go in there, and yes, it's an athletic competition, but let's say I get to, you know, I get to fight to the ground, and I'm in that mount position, and I'm throwing shots, and I need to throw a couple of more elbows to his
yeah.
head to
or
get the
– any elbows. How hard is it to
yeah.
throw one elbow?
He's like, yeah, I need
yeah.
to do that to finish the fight. Am I going to be able to elbow my friend in the head that's sitting here? And he's like, no. And this is George St. Pierre, whose opinion is widely respected throughout
yeah.
the sport as one of the great speakers and great representatives of it, and he's like, I could never do that. And
yeah.
I was looking for it because I wanted to find it, but I couldn't find it. So if anybody finds that clip or remembers that clip, I'd
easy.
Love to see
people,
it.
People will understand that side of things. I think people understand the fact of like, man, how hard was that for them to be in that situation? But the honorable thing would have just let the UFC or the PFL to just accept the results of the fight, look for that at the beginning, and try not to make those matchups randomly like that again in the future. I mean,
yep.
And people understand it. People get it. As much as fighters that night were like, dude, this is a really shitty fight. They should be kind of embarrassed for themselves. That they get it.
Yep.
They're still a part of them that they understand and they get it, you know. And if not, They just haven't been in that close of a situation, you know?
100%.
I mean, it's definitely more than just training partners. I mean, like, the relationship these two have, I mean, it's legit and it's deep, you know? So yeah. I think
Because I totally get that, the ones who are like, yeah. we cross-trained once, so I don't want to fight them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like, or we come from a big mega gym. We both happen to be in AT&T circle at the same time. We're in the same orbit, but like, oh, there's 150 of us in there training.
We rolled twice, so I don't want to fight the guy. Yeah. Like, come on, bro.
That's silly.
You know, that's silly. But this was a different situation. This was a unique situation, and I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, last thing I want to say real quick. Chris Lencioni, man. Having a hard go right now, so just keep him in your thoughts. If you can donate. Brain damage as a result of a heart attack. Apparently his heart wasn't pumping correctly and suffered brain damage because of it. I was reading the article I think Steven Morocco put out today at MMA Fighting, but said 3 weeks into his hospitalization, his medical bills are well over $300,000, which is just ridiculous, number one. I don't even get me started on our medical system. That's insane. But beyond the financial struggles, like, I mean, he's going through physical struggles right now. So, just keep him in your thoughts, because that dude, if you ever spent any time around him, a great dude, man. I mean, there's a reason he's sunshine, man. That dude, had great energy, and, it is unfortunate to see what he's going through. So I just want to give, quick attention to that, because it definitely needs it. Like I said, if nothing else, you know, try to send some positive energy his way, but if you can contribute in any way. His family is going to be facing an uphill battle, assuming he can recover fully. So, incredibly unfortunate situation. Hate to end on a low note, but definitely didn't want to let the episode go by without saying that. Appreciate everybody that supports us over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. If you can help us out over there, we certainly do appreciate that. It will give you exclusive access to the and a half episodes, and we definitely appreciate those, which come out basically just every week, because there's a UFC show every week.
Every week.
If not, at the very least, if you could take a second to rate us, review us, leave us some positive feedback, that helps us out as well. But more than anything, just enjoy the fights. Get ready for International Fight Week. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be a busy schedule.
Let us know if you're coming out for the UFC X or something. If you guys are coming in town for International Fight Week, let's try to get together.
I love it. We'll get maybe have a little frosty beverage.
Yes, we tend to do that from time to time.
From time to time, like today.
Like today.
Shots of tequila to start the day.
Yay.
Cold coffee is getting a little bit wild. Still had a little bit of that leftover VGK tequila, baby.
That's it.
Bringing in the Stanley Cup. I mean, we had to celebrate. City of Champions. Thanks for listening.